Welcome to Conexión Circular, where we aim to raise awareness of sustainability and circular economy topics. Stay tuned with us so we can learn together more about how we can adopt a sustainable behavior. I am Viridiana Bello-Wickle, and today we will discuss technology, the driving force behind sustainability. Our guest is Alicia Dowd from California. She is an associate environmental consultant and AESG in Dubai, and she has over 10 years of experience in the Middle East and the US. Also, she's passionate about impact assessment, integrated water resources management, and water scarcity, quality, distribution, storage, and conservation. Welcome, Alicia, and thank you so much for joining us today for this amazing project.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to speak about this topic of why I think technology is the driving force behind sustainability. And it's something that I've been vocal about over the past few years. It's even a topic I was really fortunate to discuss at Dubai Expo here in the UAE, which really was a forum that allowed sustainability and its themes to thrive. And so this topic, I think, is something I wanted to share with everybody else. And I think it's because I feel so strongly that our biodiversity is deteriorating, not just here in the Middle East, not just in Europe, not just in the US, everywhere. It's a worldwide concern. Unfortunately, it's projected to get worse if we don't change some of our bad habits and if we don't change our mindset. So, you know, when we think about it, species are going extinct faster than any time in history. So our business as usual mindset really needs to be, we think that we have the capabilities and we have the technology now. And we need to really harness that technology and those tools to be that driving force for a sustainable future. I believe, and I think everyone can agree, that we need a healthy biodiversity and we need to do it sustainably. Why we need a healthy biodiversity? Well, we need it because it essentially runs the foundations of our air quality, our soil quality, and our water quality, which are really important aspects of a good and healthy environment. So we're at a point where we need to harness the digital revolution upon us, using a combination of technologies to really achieve our desired environmental sustainability goals.
I agree with you. I see that there is a lot of things that we have to change. One of the most important things is to change the way that we consume the products and how we produce it also.
Absolutely.
Before jumping to the main topic, can you tell us more about yourself? I really feel your passion about sustainability, but what motivates you to work in sustainability?
It's a very good question, and I haven't always worked in sustainability. I actually studied environmental science and environmental engineering back in California, which is where I grew up. But I've been living abroad in the Middle East mostly and Southern Africa since 2008. And that's where, you know, sustainability is more of a recent concept. But in the environmental field, I think that that passion just came from understanding that we needed to really protect it, bottom line. And how was I going to do this in a professional way to actually make some big impacts? And so I think my career has, you know, primarily been environmental. I am a chartered environmentalist, and I've been working in the field for many, many years. I would say 15 years of a combination of, you know, university work as well as professional work in many different capacities. I've been a technician, an engineer, a consultant. And so I've kind of blended the environment and sustainability because you really have to understand one to successfully implement the other, which would be understanding the environment that we have now, understanding how it will change, and how we can manage that sustainably. So for me, it's a blended approach of environmental sustainability because we must act now to find the solutions and really implement them. So I have that passion to bring my environmental experience, blend it with sustainability initiatives and technology, and really try to find the best ways to solve some of our issues that we're facing now. So like mentioned before, I do spend a lot of my time in environmental impact assessments and water quality and water stewardship. That's what I enjoy doing. But obviously we have to find ways to manage these resources in a sustainable way. So I think this gives an idea of I have that passion, and it's been something that I've had for a long time, and I don't know where it really stems from, except I know that it's important, and I know that I want to share my experiences, and I also just want to share, I think what I believe others will find beneficial to make the changes, and they can be small changes, but those changes will absolutely make a difference.
Absolutely right. Well, in these days, I think we have increased our knowledge about the Paris Agreement and what we need to achieve in the next coming years. So one of the main goals is to commit to keeping global warming below the 2.0 degrees with the guidance of the Sustainable Development Goals. So which one of these 17 SDGs are your favorite?
Well, when I look at all the SDGs, they're all fantastic, obviously. And I don't really believe that the SDGs can be achieved in isolation. They really are an interlinked sort of framework to tackle some of these goals that we need to work on together. But I really am interested in SDG 6, which is clean water and sanitation, as well as SDG 14, life below water. And I think the reasons for this is because I feel that our natural water resources are being threatened from anthropogenic pollution, which meaning pollution that we're putting into the environment for our unsustainable activities. So these sort of SDGs is where I like to focus, because I think, I just feel that it's important to improve that mindset that our natural resources, such as water, is going to be so much more difficult to manage if it's just full of waste and pollution. So I think just to, in order to meet any of our water needs to protect these resources, we need to look at all the SDGs, but professionally, I enjoy SDG 6 and 14 the most. And that's kind of, I had a quote here because I thought it was important to highlight, but by 2030, we need to improve our water quality by reducing pollution, eliminating dumping, minimizing the release of hazardous chemicals or materials, and having the proportion of untreated wastewater, and substantially increasing recycling and safe reuse globally. So this has come from, the SDGs when they have some of their targets on life below water and clean water and sanitation. So we just all need to be mindful that a lot of our waste is just ending up in the marine environment, and that has a whole host of problems as well. So we're not managing our water sustainably as well.
Yes, I think that we are all connected, and when we have to take care about everything, so the SDG works all together to achieve this this sustainable behavior. And as I said, why the water is important, because we need the water to grow our food. We need the water for our bodies also, and it's important we have this knowledge how to stewardship this resource that is the most important thing, because we have life because of water. And after the pandemic, we have seen this increase in learning more about sustainability, more about circular economy, more about how to improve our behavior. And with this also, we have the face of the new digital era, with new technological developments, and every day we have a lot of change now with the metaverse, with the AI intelligent the ChatGPT that is giving us advice how to say the things and everything. So with all these new things, Alicia, how could technology help to develop more sustainable solutions?
Well, I honestly hate saying it because I feel that, you know, sometimes it's unfortunate that we're so consumed by our technology, you mm-hmm. know, our phones and our internet and our computer access and everything. But I think that we also have to look on the positive side and embrace the technology that we do have to put it to good use. So I think we need to realize that we have the capabilities and we can do, you know, we can enhance and visualize intelligent points in many different dynamics. So we can really understand what's happening in the environment. It's really key that the, you know, our survival of the human race is centered around technology. And when I say that, I mean environmentally sound technology. So meaning technologies that are able to not cause pollution or not cause environmental impact, whether it's desalinating water, whether it's putting up windmills or whatever we're doing, we have to do it in an environmental sound way. So like I said, it's using our precious natural resources, but in a way that we use them sensibly. So technology plays an important role to improve the efficiency of material and energy use. And that's where we need to strive to make sure we get to that point that we reach and we use our natural resources efficiently. So just as an example, in case that sounds a little bit all technical, but I think that the recent technology, and there's a lot of different stories you can read out there of how we're harnessing what scientists know, but they're able to now design really, I don't know, intricate sort of ways to see the environment that we might have not considered before. For example, a jellyfish was actually created, inspired sort of jellyfish robot capable of navigating in the sensitive underwater areas where people can't go or other normal remote operating vehicles could go. And this was really to explore endangered coral reefs to evaluate their health and the conditions. And once this was identified by this robotic jellyfish, then we can know where to rehabilitate and the new corals and plant new corals. So this is just one example of how technology can reach points where we can't as a human. Often, you know, when we end up polluting something, we might not know what happens to it in the end. So we have to harness this technology to get down to where we aren't able to understand, where we can explore, and then we can get a good insight of what we need to do or how we can help and rehabilitate some of these areas that might have been degraded. So the Internet of Technology, like you mentioned before, offers us the ability to visualize the environment, which we might not understand yet, or areas that we haven't been able to reach. Even sensors that can prompt early detection on, you know, if there's a flood, lots of rain, and some technology that is able to tell us flooding is going to occur at this point because it has these senses and responses to give us, you know, this would also help save lives. So I think that technology, we need to find that balance and the effective way to connect these habitats, I guess you could say, is because we want everything to be able to communicate and link together because we've become so disconnected from nature. You know, we have so many built up environments now, but we rely on nature. So how can we now, I guess, communicate with nature and get the best from both sides? So we need to responsibly apply these technologies. And, you know, that's key, is to make sure that technologies we do, you know, put out there, they are done responsibly. And that's, you know, for the use of drones or sensors and monitors. We need to do this, but we need to do it responsibly, and we need to really get some great results from it. So our ability to approach to monitor sensitive and vulnerable environments. So I think an example that some people may already know is that there are sensors in communities that can monitor the ambient air or the noise levels for public health safety concerns. And it will give a trigger to say levels of air quality or noise is too much in this area. And then we can act accordingly. So these are just examples of why I think technology is going to be that driving force if done responsibly.
Yes, I think that we need to work together with the technology to develop better solutions, because, for example, if we don't measure, we don't know what is the impact. We cannot reduce or impact in the way that we consume the energy, water, any resource. And also because of the technology, we can save time to, for example, to do this kind of simulation, what is the best solution if we have implemented these new, for example, new chemicals or new materials for construction. So yes, it's an integrated work together.
Exactly.
And then biometrics, I think that is the nature has developed for long time ago solutions, and if we just take our eyes to see what solutions has developed the nature to all these problems, maybe we can solve in a better way, sustainable way, this climate change challenge, no? So
yeah. I agree. I think nature has everything right there for us. I mean, it's been doing it way before we've ever been here. So I think we have a lot to learn from nature. And, you know, as the human race and have all the technology and science at our hands, you know, we can put both of them together and look at how it responds and put in our technology solutions. And it really should be something that we should think about.
Yes. Now, for example, with the carbon storage, we have seen that this is a key topic to tackle for the climate change. No, so how the nature can also provide us these key solutions for carbon storage and building climate resilience. In your experience as environmental consultant, can you explain us what are nature-based solutions and how they work?
Yes, so it's a great question, because a nature-based solution is a really valuable tool if it's used the correct way. Now, it's not meant to just solve everything if we plant trees, for example, but it's meant to kind of be an extra layer of resilience and protection. So we have this connectivity with technology. It has to be coupled with science, but then it can be complemented with nature-based solutions. So a nature-based solution is a solution or an action taken to predict something and sustainably manage it and restore natural and modified ecosystems. And this can address not just societal challenges, but it can also help benefit it can help benefit the overall environment and ecosystem and overall the biodiversity, right? So that nature-based solution should incorporate nature in a sustainable way to manage those complex situations, like you said, as climate change. It's a huge topic, but if we kind of break it down on desertification, what nature-based could we tackle to manage that? An example would be planting of mangroves. This would, combat some of the rising sea levels on some of the coastal areas that might otherwise cause flooding. But also this solution of mangrove planting, something that's very big at the moment, because there's so many benefits of mangroves, not just as carbon storage, but obviously it's building that resilience to the coastlines. It's great for air quality. It's great for baby fish before they got into the big oceans. So we know that mangroves have huge benefits. And I think it's important for us to know that, nature-based solutions can definitely be effective, but it's not going to be the number one way to solve some of our challenges that we have. So my role as environmental consultant is I try to provide with options on how they can benefit from incorporating these nature-based solutions into their development, not just to protect their assets that they have, but also to enhance the local environment, because it's important that, as they're developing something, that the least they can do is make sure that they're leaving the environment in a better state, or the surrounding environment in a better state than what it was. And in, you know, naturally, this will have multiple benefits, not just for them, but into the environment. So I help support, and I really enjoy each client and their needs, and really bring to their attention on how they can identify that natural capital, meaning, you know, the biodiversity that they already have in the ecosystems, which will add that value and benefit their business, benefit the society. And like I said before, bottom line is nature always provides. If we look after it, if we enhance it, if we rehabilitate it, it can provide. So this is, you know, for example, something like planting a native plant species, which has the ability to remove toxic materials from the soil, whether it's, you know, natural levels or whether it's levels from past contamination. But, you know, it's about understanding the land, which comes down to my environmental background, understand the conditions of that environment, air quality, soil quality, and then try to come up with solutions. Not engineered solutions all the time, but natural solutions. How would nature do this? I guess you could say, what would nature do to fix this situation? And so I think there's so many more ways that we can easily integrate these nature-based solutions. But we just have to be reminded that they're not going to solve everything. They still take time. They still take monitoring. From what I've read, it's forecasted to see over the next 7 years that the UN projects said the population will be at 8.5 million people by 2030. Now, with this number, that's a lot of people that we're going to have to be responsible for. So I think, you know, we really have to start looking at nature to say, nature, how can we take care of you so you can now take care of the growing population that's coming in the next, you know, 10 years, 7 years now. So it's no longer 2030 is upon us, it's coming. And are we prepared? Is nature prepared?
Yes, I think that is a huge number of population for the 2030. Before, I think everybody is in 10 years. No, we have less than 7 years now. And the time is ticking. So yeah, with this rapid urbanization, that is a lot of pressure for the environment, because we need to provide, well, the nature has to provide food, water, soil. Also, we have to provide houses. So how can the nature-based solution help cities to face this pressure? Have you seen a change how we design cities, how we are living in the cities, or can you give us your opinion?
Yeah, absolutely. There definitely have been more developers that are looking to integrate this into their designs, or existing communities that want to now find ways to kind of remediate some of these pressures of these big cities. But just to kind of ground the point, I wanted to bring up that just in 2021, in October, the UN declared a clean and healthy environment as a human right. Now, this has taken over 30 years to be formally recognized, but it's a big deal. Now, if we're declaring that, you know, we have a right as a human to have a clean, healthy environment, I would say we have a lot to do, because a lot of us live in urban environments. So we need to now get very creative on how we adapt these cities to also give us this clean and healthy environment. So urbanization does put a tremendous amount of strain on the environment. But I know that, and I think from experience, that if we do work closely with nature rather than against it, meaning just exploiting it and taking everything we can and not giving anything back, if we work with it, we'll be in a much better position to understand our limits and how to better apply our understanding of sustainability. You know, this will lead to us finding new ways for renewable energy. So this city has the opportunity to increase renewable energy because it's got, you know, a high amount of sun throughout the year. So kind of understanding what the environment we're in has to offer us, and how can we harness that, and how can we really benefit from that in our communities. And I think that'll help offset some of that pressure cities may put on the environment if we look to those, you know, renewable sources. So I'm going back to mangroves again quickly, because I really think that it's something that most people can relate to now, because they've been getting such a big hype of mangroves lately, which is fantastic. But it provides carbon storage, and it offers, you know, I said some of the benefits before. So we know that it's worth protecting, but we need to get the people in the community involved as well. We need to get more people involved that in a community level, in a city, in a region, they can also participate and tackle climate change as well. Mangroves are just one example of how we can harness that nature to support the pressure we are putting on the environment. And more of these initiatives need to happen on a global scale, but also a community scale, to take that pressure off of these cities. And that can be, you know, something as easy as, you know, you have more sort of understanding in place that we need to be more mindful of our air quality. So, you know, carpooling, for example, and reducing the amount of cars on the road. Or, you know, we need to be mindful of soil pollution. So maybe no longer, you know, watering your driveway down with a water hose where maybe oil had spilled from your car, and now that's going to go down somewhere into the soil or maybe into the ocean. So all these little things, when people don't think, they immediately change, and you know, they could be doing a lot better than they might know. They could be actually making some change. So with all the scientific knowledge that we have now, it doesn't, you know, you don't have to be a technical person, or you don't have to be environmental scientist or professional to make these changes. People, you know, there's a lot of initiatives where communities can get involved, cities can get involved, and they can participate in the well-being of their environment that there is. Like I mentioned before, we can't do business as usual the way that we're going. So we have to think beyond today. We have to harness those renewable resources. We need to understand that our consumption as a growing population, we have to know that the expectations on the environment that we have to really be aligned with what it can provide. So I think if we come back down to how nature-based solution can help cities, it can definitely help, but it is take a good governance to make sure that they are the ones leading that change as well. You know, making sure that they're giving back to the community, that they can provide, you know, spaces for us to maybe grow our own vegetables, or, you know, helping as well. It's a combined effort. But I think that cities will have to start being creative now on how they can sort of reduce some of that pressure in their ecosphere. And that would be just getting involved and making a difference.
Yes, I think that sometimes we don't have the awareness about these topics. One of the examples that I can give in this moment is that, for example, Cancun was so beautiful 10 years ago. The beaches are so clean and everything. But what happened is that the government, they allowed it to to cut all the mangroves. So that made a huge impact in the environmental, and now we face a lot of problems with the mangroves, because we don't have these this natural solution create that the water was so clear. Now without them, we have all this pollution in the water, and it's because someone didn't know or didn't realize that this is so important. It's an equilibrium. Why we have the clean environment? Because we have this solution. And yeah, when the government doesn't have the right advice, sometimes they just decide it and they don't take care about the environment. And in your experience, Alicia, how can natural-based solutions enhance city sustainability and resilience?
So I think it's one of those questions, is that, you know, is the city prepared to do it? But if it is, and I think most cities and urban environments are realizing that they have to embrace nature-based solutions, and it's the right thing to do. But I think people, you know, the cities must allow the land to function. So it might sound a bit weird, you know, land having a function. Okay, it has buildings, it has this and that. But I'm saying, you know, what was the land before it was built up? So I mean, allowing the land to serve as it would in its natural state before any of the urban environments took place. So all the land before had the ability to function before being built up on. But now that land functions around us rather than with us. And that's what we really need to change, that, you know, we need to now respect, okay, let's not try to change everything on the land, because it had a really good way of operating before we came. So if we integrate into it more, it's going to probably be much better for the way that we live. There is not one blanket answer for this. This is obviously my opinion, my interpretation, and what I've seen on how, you know, we might apply some items to other projects. But each land has a specific strength to it. Of course, we've got many different varieties of land environments, but we need to understand these strengths of the land, identify those, and then, like I mentioned before, what nature-based solution would be the most suitable for the right environment. Obviously, you're not going to plant mangroves in the middle of the desert, but you might plant a native, you know, a native species that's going to provide shade for you know, for different terrestrial ecology in the area already. So you really have to understand, and I think this is what should be understood, is that in any initiatives or any solutions that are nature-based really need to be suitable for the environment. Otherwise, they won't be successful. And, you know, we don't have time to do a project anymore and not be successful. We don't have, you know, time to do initiatives that aren't going to have an impact. So we also need to identify the weaknesses of the land, so we know that we can maybe strengthen some of those areas and make it better. You know, there's opportunities to make things that are degraded and turn it into something that would better provide, you know, some ecosystem benefits that will help us build more, you know, to become more resilient for climate change, for, you know, as temperatures rise or as the sea levels rise, or, you know, get more dust storms or higher rainfall, all these things with climate change. What can we do to also protect ourselves from that by using nature-based solution? Planting more trees to stop desertification, that can also, we can restore the wetlands, and we can have more zoning to protect these areas and to let people know that we need these areas to be kind of given their space so they can do what they're meant to do and be that barrier that we need. We must look at how we can use nature. We must recognize that nature can help us build back better now and in the future, but it's something that we all need to get on board with now. Again, nature does provide, but we just need to work with it.
So for you, what do you think that is missing in the cities so they can integrate the nature-based solutions into their strategy for climate change?
So what I think can definitely be integrated is more open green spaces, but I'm talking about spaces that have an appropriate landscape. So, you know, when we do a lot of our landscaping in urban in cities, you know, they're not often the species of plants that fit the environment. You know, they're often, you know, they take high water demands, or they take a lot of maintenance, or, you know, they don't provide anything else except look good. When, you know, we could think of how we can bring some beautiful vegetation and it's going to bring some birds, it's going to clean the air. You know, so I think that a city really needs to understand its challenges. If they, you know, if they have poor air quality, you know, okay, they can obviously plant some, but is it going to be the right trees? And is it going to provide for nature? And is it going to provide for people? And that's one thing that I don't see as much as I want, is having enough green spaces that have many functions. And the function should be the benefit to biodiversity, with us included. And that's something that I like to see more, is that we take more effort in ensuring whatever we do to, you know, make a city more appealing, but we do it with purpose, because otherwise, you know, what is the purpose of irrigating, you know, some areas that nothing benefits from except the visual eye, where it looks pretty. So I think that that's what a lot of cities can do better. You know, if you've got pedestrian friendly walkways, people are more encouraged to walk. If you've got more green spaces, more people are going to be outside, which, you know, has a lot of benefits as well. So people need that space, and it'll benefit the city as a whole, but also benefit the biodiversity in the area.
Yes, I agree with that. That I think how we design the cities is the way that how for what we are doing a city, you know, like what is the reason, and also to integrate more the nature, because sometimes the solution is like, I just do a deforestation here in this land and build more a new supermarket or a new mall, and the people is just inside, and it's not the same to walk in the forest or be in a surrounded in a garden with a space, no?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So after hear all your insights about what is nature-based solutions, how we can integrate the, like you, the experts, to design a better city where the population can enjoy the way of living, because we need to improve the way we live, is reduce our time indoors to be more time outdoors. And sometimes it depends on the conditions of the ecosystem. As you mentioned, it's not the same to design a city in the middle of the desert and then bring, these kind of plants that are belong to the forest. So when we have the knowledge how design, we can provide better solutions. We can provide, mimic what have done the environment, the nature by itself, to have a better quality of life. So just to close this insightful interview, now can you tell me how we, because we have talked about the nature, now how we can contribute to tackle climate change?
Well, we all know that climate change is a huge matter to tackle. But let's not get discouraged, because it can be done. I think it can be done, but it's going to require everyone. We all need to get involved. It can't be done alone, obviously, and we can't rely on, you know, the scientists coming up with all these solutions. We can't always rely on the technology, although it's great to have it and use it when needed, but we need to have an effort. So, I mean, everyone will need to participate in these activities that can make change, and we need to do it collectively so we can contribute to offsetting climate change impacts. So from a household level, you know, I think there's a lot more people could do, and they might not be aware of it yet, but once you start, I think it's got a great benefit. So if it's a city, you know, a city level, definitely there's a lot of collaborations that need to happen to tackle climate change, but I think the best way for an individual to start is at home, because that is the one place where you can make all the right choices, because you have complete control, right? So you can reduce how much food waste you have in the house, and you can compost it. You can limit how much water you use. You can use, you know, the technology in your house, like even for managing how much water is coming out of the taps, or how the toilets are flushing, or, you know, you have that control at your house, whether you keep the lights on or off, or how much energy you use. How cold do you want to keep it in your house? These are just like a few things that I think at a household level you can tackle, which can make a difference. Because again, all those factors of, you know, our lights and our water is down to natural resources, our energy and our water consumption. And that's what you can do at home. You know, we're in the position to make the right choices. We have the science, we have the knowledge, and we have that technology. And it's accessible to most of us before. If you want to go on the internet, you can buy a home meter that tracks the air quality in the house, so you know. We don't have an excuse anymore not to participate. There's lots of people actively trying to do the right thing. We just need to become more involved, more engaged, become more aware. And I think that we'll be able to tackle this. But if you want to start with something, start at home. Bottom line is we all have to stop consuming too much. And I'm not perfect for sure, but I think if we all try to have that in the back of our minds that we consume too much food, consume too much water, consume too much, you know, when we go shopping, textiles, whatever it is, we have to limit our consumption in all levels. And we need to look at how we travel. We need to stop cutting down our forest, you know, having that demand for having so much stuff all the time. Manufacture goods, we need to purchase more responsibly. We have to, you know, use renewable energy, solar panels when we can. Whatever it is, we should all look at our household levels, what we can do, and we can make that change. So I really just wanted to leave the conversation because it's been really great talking. I could talk for hours about this, and I hope people, you know, feel that they can make a change. And I want to leave by saying that, you know, all the women in science, there's engineers developing solutions, there's people and a lot of women involved now that are paving the way for a more sustainable future. So women and girls are essential to secure a healthier and more sustainable future for us all. So I hope that everybody agrees that we can do this together, but, you know, let's motivate those around us to do the right thing as well.
Yes, what amazing words that you have said. That I strongly agree that we need the help of everybody to tackle the climate change. It's not just one person. And the good thing that I see that every day there is more groups that has this kind of commitment to change, to drive the sustainable behavior. And the most encouraged is that I have seen more women involved in this, no? Thank you so much, Alicia, for contributing and helping us to spread awareness about this topic. And yes, I hope we continue working together. And thank you so much for your amazing words. And let's do good and better every day. Good afternoon, all.
Thank you.